As the Buddha once said, all he taught was suffering and the end of suffering. Everything else that he taught is an elaboration on one of those two topics. What's sad is that a lot of people have trouble accepting what the Buddha had to say about suffering itself. Some people have him saying that life is suffering as a way of rejecting his teachings. They say, look at all the pleasures in life. Well, there are pleasures in life. He doesn't deny that. But he never said that life is suffering. Some people have him say, well, there is suffering. But that doesn't tell you much. It's good that he does point to the fact that suffering is an important problem. And there are even people who say, well, the Buddha didn't really talk about suffering at all. I was reading a book one time where the author was saying the Buddha defines suffering as the five aggregates, or dukkha as the five aggregates. And the five aggregates are basically what you experience. And so basically the Buddha is saying experience is the five aggregates, and so the Four Noble Truths are not about suffering, they're about experience. Another scholar said that the way the Buddha defines suffering is ungrammatical. And because the Buddha would speak only grammatical ways, or standard grammatical ways, it must have been a later edition. So we end up with no truth, no suffering. And you wonder why people want to listen to this teaching anyhow. So when he talks about what suffering is, he doesn't say that it's the five aggregates, it's the five clinging aggregates. He points to problems that people recognize in their lives. The suffering of aging, illness, death, being separated from what you love, having to be with things you don't love, not getting what you want. And he boils the common denominator of all these things down to the five clinging aggregates. The clinging is the problem. And that, he says, is something you want to comprehend. Here again, there's some problems that people have. For some people, it's simply acknowledging that there is suffering, and they leave it there. But when the Buddha defined comprehending, it's basically understanding suffering to the point where you have no passion, aversion, or delusion around it. We might not think we have passion for our suffering, but remember that definition, clinging. We cling to things that we desire. We cling to things that we have passion for. We feed off of these things. In fact, that's one of the meanings of the word upadana, or clinging. You feed, you take sustenance. So the Buddha is saying something pretty counterintuitive, that we suffer because of the things that we cling to, the things that we have desire for. And a lot of people don't like to hear that. But he's saying that if you take a noble attitude towards these things, you can separate yourself from it. Because you look at the things that you have passion for, and you begin to realize they're not really worth it. If we just had the one noble truth, you might say, well, if that's all there is, might as well accept it. But there's also that third noble truth, that it is possible to put an end to suffering. That's the other topic that the Buddha taught. You do that by putting an end to the cause, which is craving. And you do that by developing the path. So there's this alternative. When you look at suffering from the point of view of the Four Noble Truths, all four of them, you take that noble attitude that you're willing to step back from your likes and your dislikes and your passions. Then you can do something about it. That's the whole point of the teaching, is that you can do something about it. Now, oftentimes it requires that you get the mind really quiet to see these things. You can go through daily life and see, yep, there's suffering. This is stressful, that's stressful, dealing with other people. There was once a French philosopher who said, other people are hell. Because when you're dealing with other people, you don't really know them. You know what they say, you know what they do. You see it from the outside. But you can't really see their intentions. You can't really see their inner conversation. So you're dealing with a lot of uncertainty. And because you're dealing with so many people when you're outside, it's hard to see your own contribution to the suffering. Because that's what the Buddha is saying. Suffering is not something you're on the receiving end of. It's something you do. You cling. You have passion for something. The image of the First Two Noble Truths, craving, can also be translated as thirst. Clinging, as I said, can be translated as feeding. You thirst for something, and then you find it. You feed on it. At that point, when you finally found something you can feed on, you think you've found something that you can rely on. It will be a source of happiness. And that right there, the Buddha is saying, that's where the suffering is. So he's asking you to look at your feeding habits. How are you feeding in such a way that creates suffering? He talks about four kinds of food altogether. There's the physical food for the body, and then there are three kinds of food for the mind. There's the food of consciousness, there's the food of contact, and then there's the food of what he calls intellectual intentions, which can be translated basically as your intentions. These are the things the mind feeds on. If you don't have these things, the mind goes pretty crazy. If there's no contact, you're put into a sensory deprivation tank, and the mind begins to lose its sense of reality. You put yourself in a prison, or get put into a prison, and you're in a cell where there's no variety from any point during the 24 hours. There's nothing new to know. Again, you go crazy. And you can't use your intentions if you have no sense that your intentions can make any difference in life. You get into a severe depression. So these are the things the mind needs, feeds on. And yet, even though we realize that we can't do without these things, still they cause suffering. And so again, you get the attitude, well, if there's suffering there, I've got to put up with it. But the Buddha says if you train the mind, you can learn how to be without these kinds of food and not suffer. That's what's radical about this path. Which is why when the Buddha decided to teach, he said that the doors to the deathless were open. That's the third noble truth. That's the end of suffering. Let those with ears show forth their faith. Otherwise, if you hear these teachings and the possibility of a deathless happiness appeals to you, okay, put some trust in the Buddha. Follow his teachings. Because, as I said, so much of the Four Noble Truths is very counterintuitive. That you'll be able to live without your cravings, live without your clingings. And this practice of training the mind can do that for you. So it's all based on faith, based on conviction. A lot of people don't like the word faith. They take the attitude, well, the Buddha said, not to believe anything that you can't see for yourself. That's a very superficial reading of the Kalama Sutta. He says when you put something into practice and see what the results are, and you take the results that you see and you compare them to the teachings of the wise, and where they're in agreement, you can put some faith in that. Even then, it's an element of faith. Because if you're going to know the real truth, you're going to be able to judge it. One, you have to commit yourself to doing the path. That's the only way you can judge it fairly. And that means you have to become a reliable judge yourself. And fortunately, the qualities developed in the path will help you in that direction. You develop more mindfulness, ardency, alertness. Get the mind concentrated. You develop your powers of discernment. These are the things you're going to need. To make them reliable, you base them on right action, right speech, right livelihood, so that you can become a reliable judge. As he says, the Dharma is nourished by commitment and reflection. So you really have to give yourself to it. Only then can you be a judge, a reliable judge of what the Buddha had to say. So you have to put some skin in the game. You can't just say, well, I don't agree with that, or that doesn't sound reasonable to me, or doesn't fit in with my views. If you really want to know what the Buddha had to teach, you have to commit yourself. And again, put up with the fact that what the Buddha is saying here is that the reason you're suffering is something you're doing, something you like doing. And your willingness to take on that assumption is a noble attitude to begin with. This is what makes the truths noble. They require you to become a noble person, which is why there's dignity in the path. I've told the story of the Russian emigre who, when I first came here to the States, was sitting in a Dharma talk I gave one time. I happened to mention the word dignity. And afterwards she came up and she said she'd lived in America now for 10 years. And she had learned the word dignity when she studied English in Russia, but she had never heard it used here. Makes you stop and think. You'd probably say the same thing for nobility. We might talk about the nobility as a class, but nobility as a real quality of the mind and of the actions. Something we rarely think about, especially in this society of ours where everything seems to be measured by how much money you can make and how much money you can throw around. Basically giving in to your cravings and clingings, putting them in charge. So you might say that what we're doing here is un-American. It certainly doesn't fit in with the normal run of things. But we're taking a noble attitude towards our suffering and a noble attitude towards our own responsibility for our suffering. How else are we going to become noble ones? So when you see that there's suffering in your life, stress, dis-ease, ask yourself, what am I doing? What am I holding on to? What is it that I like that's causing this suffering? Then you're doing the duty that the Buddha said should be done with regard to it. The duty that allows you to step back and separate yourself from it. As the Buddha said, that's what discernment is all about, seeing things as separate. The things you've latched onto, the things you've clung to. And you can see that they really are not worth clinging to. You can separate yourself out from them. That's when you really comprehend them. That's the task the Buddha sets for us. And it's up to us to really listen to him, to hear what he really has to say. And then commit ourselves to testing as to whether it's true or not. He says it's a noble truth. There are other people saying there he had made no truth claims at all. And the only way you're going to find the answer to that riddle or that question is through commitment and reflection. Which I hope is what you're doing right now.